For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, your favorite Cro-Magnons, Mr. Mark Tuttle and Mr. Timothy O'Donnell. Gentlemen, what's your vocation? Not that you've been on vacation, but we're talking vocation this
week.
This is what you do when you work, not when you don't work. So vocations are one of those things that, from a Catholic standpoint, when you say the word vocations, immediately the first thing that comes to my mind are priests, nuns, deacons, brothers, friars, those who are vowed religious. But every single person who does anything in this world has a vocation of one kind or another, to be a father, to be a mother, to be a leader, to do special work, to do your daily work. It's all comes down to what do you spend your time doing to the honor and glory of God. So today we're going to talk about vocations. Now, I want to start by telling you a little story. This is kind of a fun one.
I love your stories. Go ahead.
Kind of fun one for me. I didn't get married until I was 47 years old.
Oh, there you go.
And so my brother, who was a teacher and catechist and is now a deacon, for the longest time always used me as an example of someone who was called to the vocation of the single life. Mm. Well, I blew that out of the water when I got married. So, my vocation went from the single life to not only husband, but stepfather of four kids. Vocations change throughout our lives. So how are we to approach vocations in a way that, we're not locked into any one thing, but we're doing our service to God along the way?
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right that when people use the term vocation, most people automatically think priests or religious life. We have Vocation Awareness Week every year. Actually, isn't there even a Vocation Awareness Month? There might even be a Vocation Awareness Month for all I know. But we all always automatically think about the priests, the religious, the brothers, the sisters, the nuns, the monks. We always think about them, and we don't think about married life necessarily as a vocation. And then on top of that, and I think this is even more to the point, when we talk about the vocations crisis, we're usually talking about a shortage of men being called to the priesthood. But I think when you look at vocations that are in crisis, marriage really needs to be included in that discussion as sort of in a crisis state within our country of people not understanding what the vocation of marriage really is, people not understanding the permanency of vocation, mm-hmm. any vocation, not understanding the permanency of it, and also not understanding, I think, the religious nature to a certain extent of marriage within our culture. That when you get married, there's really three people there on the altar.
Right.
There's the bride, the groom, and there's God. And it's a covenant between all three of them. And I think people kinda miss that within that. So let's unpack this idea of vocation, kind of what it is, and then I say let's move into this idea of sort of there being a crisis around vocations.
Yeah, let's do it. I really like the way Kent started this program off with talking about vocation as sort of what we do for the glory, honor, and glory of God. And I might refine it just a little bit or modify it a little bit and say vocation is that it's God's purpose. It's discovering and aligning our whole being with God's purpose for us in this life. So God created us with a purpose in mind, and he's entrusted each one of us with a mission that only we can accomplish ourselves. Like there's something God there's a purpose that God created me for that only I can accomplish. And so I have to discern what that is. And I would say my vocation emerges when I discover God's purpose for my life, and then I live in accord with that purpose as I come to know it.
Yeah, I'm going to use a fancy word. There's an antinomy there. So,
Whoa, down, cowboy. Yeah. All right. Okay. All right, we're cavemen here, Mark. Okay, go on. You're going to have to break that one down.
Break out your Webster's.
Right. So antinomy, there's a tension between two almost opposite principles at play there. On the one hand, you're exactly right. Our calling, our vocations are very unique. But on the other hand, we share those, broadly speaking, with large numbers of people. And there's sort of a broad pattern of life and a broad way of life that our vocations denote. So,
I agree with that.
Yeah. Broadly speaking, the priesthood involves a very similar way of life for pretty much all priests. Marriage involves a similar way of life for all married people. Religious life involves a similar way of life for all religious. And so there's this almost broad pattern and way of life that there's a similarity. But on the other hand, you're exactly right. It's, our vocations are unique. And, within the priesthood, within married life, within religious life, each person needs to find that sort of unique calling of what God is calling them, their purpose, their main mission here on earth. So,
One way maybe to think about that would be, as you were talking, and we all have one thing we all have in common is we're all called to sainthood. And then, so that's, we hold that in common, right? And there's a lot of, like, I like what you said, there's a certain pattern of life that goes along with growing in virtue and goodness and holiness. That we can hold in common, can understand what those are, cardinal virtues, the theological virtues, et cetera, and define those. But it's in the particular, each particular person, as you look at how each saint with a capital S is, sure, they're all saints, and yet they retain their particular individuality and their own way in which they express the gifts and talents that God has given them, and how they've aligned their life, their pattern of their life, to this broader calling to sainthood.
Right. And I think that's one of the things that differentiates each broad vocation is that set of virtues. Not that we don't have, sort of universal virtues, that we're all called to the cardinal virtues. We're all, we should all exemplify the cardinal virtues, the theological virtues. But there's subsets of virtues within those that I think come to the fore and play a more prominent role within each vocation. And so you wind up with these sort of broad habits. I mean, virtue, really, when you unpack the word virtue is a habit. It's mm-hmm. something that you obtain through repeated action so that something becomes habitual. And we can have vices, we can have bad habits, we can have good habits,
right?
I think the broad pattern of life really breaks itself down to daily habits. The daily life and daily habits of a priest are going to look very different than the daily habits and daily life of a married person. Still the same call to holiness, still ultimately the same broad virtues that we're supposed to exemplify. But when you wake up in the morning, you gather with your family to have breakfast, and then after that you may gather for the family rosary, and then you all disperse to go to school, to go to work, to head out. That looks mm-hmm. very different from the life of a priest. Mm-hmm. The sort of habitual daily nature of each of these vocations is really sort of what sets them apart one from the other.
Yeah, I think of one virtue that we ought to practice is, say, truth-telling, right? Truth-telling forms us into honest people. That's good for the soul. It's good to be honest. And yet the context in my daily life over the span of my lifetime in which I encounter these opportunities to tell the truth or not are different from anybody else's.
Boy, how do you write about that? No priest ever has to answer the question, do I look good in these pants? No, no priest is ever confronted with that dilemma. So
probably not.
There
are some married priests, so it does come up, but it's rare, right? Yeah,
That's a question pretty exclusive to the married.
There are some questions,
life.
Mark, that are just there is no right answer.
truth telling then becomes an important virtue.
That's a whole nother show about can you engage it, Aquinas left room, some room for ambush as a kind of, to use deception.
Discretion being the better part of valor.
Right. Discretion, right.
Yeah. And then there's the two sides of the virtue of courage. There can be rashness, which is a vice too. So.
Oh, right. Yeah. It could be rash, reckless. Reckless is an extreme. Yeah. As you were talking about, there are these, when it comes to vocations, it is, I think it's very, very difficult these days with the cultural setting that we find ourselves in to really hear clearly God's call. And again, I think vocation is a discernment where there's there are examples where you have sort of that St. Paul moment where you're struck. Fall off the, and you know exactly what you're supposed to be when you grow up. But for most of us, I think it tends to be more of a like the country song, "Work in Progress." It's kind of a work in progress. So we may discover, hey, I'm called to fatherhood. I'm called to married life. Hopefully, married life first before fatherhood. That would be a better order of things. But then how you live that out and how you become a good father. How you live out that vocation of fatherhood. Because I would propose that every man is called to fatherhood.
Right.
Every man is called to fatherhood. And every woman's called to motherhood. Now, there's different ways in which that's going to be lived out.
Right. And there's a, any choice you make, you're just by logic eliminating other choices. So
right.
So anytime you choose to go to one grocery store, you're choosing not to go to the other grocery store.
You're eliminating
those choices.
You can't bilocate yet.
Right.
Mark. And you're on your way though, buddy.
I keep working on it.
Right.
And I think bilocation is part of, that is part of one of those virtues of fatherhood, of being able to bilocate and be in different places at different times, because it certainly seems like, that's a necessity for fatherhood.
For me, quite frequently, my body's here. I'm present. My brain isn't. It's somewhere else.
Right. Back at Disney.
Okay, the car needs to be repaired. We got this to do.
Forming the task list.
Yeah, and the one thing we need to do right now is take a break. We're going to take a break, and we're going to be back with more of the Catholic Cave talking about vocations here on Catholic Radio Indy.
So the scan button brought you here. Awesome. We like company. Get to know us. And if you have to leave, come back. You're always welcome. Catholic Radio Indy.
Are you a pro-life advocate? Do you love the Indiana State Fair? These two interests can come together when you volunteer with Right to Life of Indianapolis at this year's Indiana State Fair. Over 100 time slots need to be filled to staff the Right to Life information booth during the fair's run beginning July 30th. For more information or to sign up to help, go to rtlindy.org and click on Get Involved.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. We are talking today about vocations. And in all those aspects, typically within the Catholic Church, you say the word vocations, we're talking vowed religious. But there's a lot more to vocations than that.
Well, yes, there's, I think, my understanding is, a read of history would be, really kind of following the Second Vatican Council, which put more emphasis on the role of the laity, that the word vocation kind of began to broaden out. Mark, you touched on some of that. So, and we've been talking a little bit about vocations for the laity, such as married life and family life and how those things might look out. We also, I think, in a secular way, vocation also can denote occupations, right? Things that we things that we do, say, to earn a living, or practice. Maybe we're called to be a healer, so we pursue the vocation of medicine and become a nurse or a doctor or something like that.
Right, and those become more and more specialized as you you know, kind of subspecialize within a specialty. So, you know, your vocation becomes not just being a doctor, but being a neurosurgeon or, you know, within teaching. You know, we get more and more specified as far as how we use our time, how we use our talents, how we use those. And I think from a secular point of view, you know, we're looking at how we use those things to serve others, because that's ultimately when you talk about work, you're talking about what are you doing to contribute to other people, to other things around you. What are you doing to, I guess, sort of to a certain extent, change the environment around you, but what are you doing to get outside of yourself? You know, philosophy is an interesting vocation in that, because when you philosophize, ultimately you are kind of getting back inside your head a little bit more, but that's probably an exception. You know, I mean, most vocations, the idea is, what are you doing to exert yourself on others and exert yourself on the world around you? So, when you get down to it, each of us have a very unique way that we do that, because we're very unique individuals. So we all have different talents. We all have different opportunities. And so how we exert those then becomes a very unique, you know, going back to, I guess, sort of the way we Catholics talk about it, a very unique purpose that God has given to each of us that only we can fulfill. So, so vocation then, as I said, you know, it's got this broad sense of a broad path of life, but then that narrows down into a very, very specific purpose that only each of us can fulfill as a unique individual.
Yeah, and I know you wanted to take the conversation a little more towards getting a little metaphysical.
Right.
With this conversation. Let's go there.
Well, right, because as Catholics, when we talk about vocation, we talk about God calling us to it, but ultimately we recognize that this is something that we choose. You know, that a vocation involves our will, and it involves our choosing of this way of life in cooperation with God, listening to God, you know, in prayer. And, you know, I think that's a very, in some ways, I'm going to say it's a uniquely Catholic viewpoint, although that Catholic viewpoint has permeated out into secular culture quite a bit, to where you've got a lot of discussion about how much choice, how much willing, how much discretion we have in what we ultimately do in our life. There are some people, and I think we've talked about him in the past, Sam Harris. You know, Sam Harris would say, any choice that you think you have in your vocation is completely illusory. You know, this was based.
Yeah, I think he would.
You know,
yeah, I think you're right.
This is based on your circumstances, where you were born, how you were born, how you were raised. All of those things ultimately determine for you what your vocation's going to be down the road, along with all sorts of other stuff for Sam Harris. But vocation would definitely be within that. And yet, you know, we Catholics look at it and say, no, the ability to choose your vocation is very important. You know, this is your cooperation with God's will. So it's the melding in a lot of ways of your will with the divine will in a very purposeful, chosen sort of way.
Yeah, I wondered, though, what are your thoughts here? This was kind of popped in my head. So as Americans, I think I tend to think of vocations, as you've been talking about it there, as, yeah, free, that I'm free to choose my vocation. But I do think in other places and other times, people saw God's will or understood God's will, that the family you were born into and the state in life you were born into was your vocation. So it was already, so if I was born into the aristocracy, well, that's part of God's divine plan, and therefore my role in life is, to a certain extent, already been determined by providence. If I'm born into a certain, maybe I'm born destitute, I'm born a commoner, I'm born into serfdom, that also is God's will for me. And maybe the most extreme example of that might be something along the lines of the caste system, right? That we've, I think it's mostly behind us now historically, but there certainly are shadows of it in India these days.
Yeah, I think as Americans, we like to think about our choice and our freedom as unlimited. We like to think that, you know, we have ultimate say over our destiny. We have ultimate, you know, we have an infinite amount of choices available to us at any given time. That would be the ideal, right? As Americans, we want that infinite amount of freedom. And the fact of the matter, nobody lives that way. Nobody is able to live that way, to have an infinite amount of choices open to them at any given time. So I think you're right. Our historical circumstances, our family's circumstances, even external circumstances outside of our family's circumstances, these all restrict down our choices. They restrict down the options that are available to us at any given time. So there's a mixture there. There's a mixture between sort of the circumstances that we have and our vocation. And as Catholics, we recognize that ultimately those all go back to Providence. And our vocation is our cooperation to a good extent with the divine will. So it's the cooperation with God's love for us, which is completely free and not constrained. But then there's also an element of our cooperation and acceptance and submission to Providence to a certain extent, which is constrained by, you know, to a good extent. So, we have this sort of dual role of the will, that on the one hand, there's the exertion of our will to choose and to make choices. But on the other hand, there's an acceptance and a role of the will within sort of accepting our circumstances. And those can be wider or narrower depending on the time and place that you're born. But they're all, to a certain extent, they're all exercises of the will. You know, the will itself is free to rebel or free to, you know, sort of accept, and it's free to repel and move away from something, or it's free to move towards something. And so our vocations, we have those movements of the will within our vocation. And, you know, you read about this, and I think this is why vocation stories are so attractive to us. You know, we love to hear the story of Ignatius lying in his bed, discerning his vocation and figuring out. We love to hear the stories of priests and how they came to discern their vocation. And we love to hear the stories of how, you know, married people met and how they discerned to get married, how they discerned whether, you know, marriage was the broad vocation, but also, you know, the particular story of them. We love to hear those stories because those are, to a good extent, stories ultimately of the will choosing correctly.
Yeah, and I think, too, one of the differences, an important difference between, say, a religious vocation and a secular vocation might be religious vocations, I think are seen to be there's a permanency there. So once you say are ordained to the priesthood or permanent diaconate, you know, you're a priest forever, right? And once you take your vows as a vowed religious, that is supposed to last until your death. Married life, though, has maybe a shorter duration often, because the marriage ends at the death of one of the spouses. And it's often the case that predominantly, both spouses don't die at the same time unless it's a horrible accident, which did happen to a really good friend of mine. Both his parents died in a car accident in their early 80s, not that long ago. Keep them in your prayers. So you can have this, and Kent kind of went here at the beginning of the story. So these vocations, especially secular vocations, can have, I'll say, a certain seasonality to them.
Right, right, right.
That you can move from one vocation, say married life, but you may lose your spouse, and then your you're not married anymore, and then another vocation would emerge.
Right. And I think that's why we divide the vocations into, religious vocations, priesthood, mm-hmm. religious life, and secular vocations, is because those secular vocations do, for those we are called to serve to a certain extent, those are callings to serve the outside world outside of the church, where with the religious and priestly vocations, your calling is to serve the church itself. It's not to say there aren't married people that are called to serve the church through their jobs and that, but broadly speaking, your calling, and that's really the root word of vocation, right? Vocare, your calling, right, is either towards the secular world or towards the labor. And you're right, with the secular world, there is sort of a seasonality to a certain extent. Today's day and age, there's a longer period of time for most young people before they get married. They're called to marriage, but they live a life longer and longer. And so, I think kind of realizing that you may have a calling towards the married life that, extends for a long time before you actually get married.
47 years.
And at that point too, you're also still open to other, other callings, other vocations. You may be called to the priesthood or religious life during that time as well. So, I find it interesting that the number of young people, particularly young women, discerning religious life is on a huge uptick, to the extent that, there's a lot of hope that, these young women will choose religious life, but they might choose to get married. And so, we don't know that the religious life is on an uptick, but we do know that there's a large, large number of young women now discerning religious life.
And with that, we need to take a break. We'll be back with more on vocations here on the Catholic Cave. You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor, tell them about Catholic Radio Indy. An interview with Father Trenton Rauch and his story on how Catholic radio influenced his vocation.
I was not struck by lightning and knocked off my horse. I had a lot of time driving in the car listening to the radio, and I just gotten to a point where I would prefer to listen to something that would be intellectually stimulating. And at the same time, I was learning about the faith, particularly the apologetics.
Catholic radio, building faith, building vocations.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford, along with Timothy O'Donnell, Mr. Mark Tuttle. And one of the terms that came up in our discussion of vocations is the word discernment. Now, discernment means, basically you're trying to figure out and get a grasp on what it is that you're intended to do. What is your vocation? How do you determine where you're going in life with that? Now, I'm going to go back and tell another story here.
All right.
About 3 years ago, as many of you know, I came very close to leaving this world.
Oh, yeah. One might say you left for a while, actually.
Yeah, no heartbeat for 30 minutes. Yeah, that pretty much puts you on your way out. But through the grace of God, I came back. Now, the one thing that I kept hearing after that, time and time again when I was talking to people, they would say to me, you're alive because God has something for you to do. Do you realize how heavy that sits on you? Mm. I mean, honestly, I went through a year or so of depression because I was struggling to figure out, okay, I survived this. I'm alive. People keep telling me God has a purpose for me. When does it start? What happens next? Is it something big? Am I supposed to, become Joan of Arc and save, France or something? I couldn't figure it out. And it was just one of the biggest struggles of my life to discern what that meant. It finally hit me after the longest time. I lived for one reason. to keep doing what I'd been doing before.
Mm.
Apparently, I was on the right track, and, you know, through the prayer of a good woman, Lord, I'm not ready to be a widow, giving back to me.
Yeah.
I was able to keep going. Those kinds of things, you know, finding a discernment in that, I mean, you know, honestly, where I am right now, I never would have pictured that, you know, 20, 30 years ago, because, you know, I had started in radio and then moved into, you know, 40 other things before I came back to radio. And, you know, not only did I come back to radio, I came back to Catholic radio. And all of a sudden I found myself, you know, looking at things and thinking, okay, so what is it that I actually do? And I have fun when somebody asks me what I do for a living. I look them square in the eye and say, I'm an evangelist.
Right.
And if they don't panic and run away, then, you know, then I can take the time to explain, no, I work in Catholic radio. I'm my purpose in life is to help spread the gospel. And I was given this microphone and these radio stations to help do that. I'm sure there are other people who, you know, find themselves called to do one thing or another, and somehow it all tapers down to how can you do it for the glory of God?
Right.
Right. Yeah, and ultimately all vocations are for that purpose, you know, for continuing the work of God through your life, through what you're called to do. And you're exactly right. It involves both, on the one hand, an acceptance to a good extent of this is kind of where I am. This is where God has put me. These are the blessings that I've been given by God. But then there's also a seeking and a more active component to it, where you're actively seeking out, what is God calling me to next? So, you know, as we said, you know, the word vocation is calling. We usually think of that in terms of, you know, forward thinking. Where am I going next? What am I supposed to do next? What's the next step? And so vocation involves both a sort of a passive side of it, of recognizing that God has put me here in this place at this time, but then also having that active side of it, of seeking out where it is I'm moving next.
Yeah, that story is really beautiful, Kent, because it, for a lot of reasons, but it, one of them is it draws out the importance of this sort of imminent presence of God in our lives, that we're, Mark, you were just touching on it too, that God placed us at this, we're this time and place for a reason, and this is the immediate, you know, sphere of influence that we should be active in, right? That our, we should be leading lives of holiness. It's all about salvation of souls, and that through our lives should be winsome examples to others to draw them to Christ. And it, I remember hearing a story from someone who had visited, you know, Mother Teresa in Calcutta, and says, American, you know, you travel halfway around the world, get there and help do really important work, right? The poorest of the poor. That's really important. But then, as I recall the story, Mother Teresa told this pilgrim, "What, you know, really, I'm glad you're here, glad you're helping, but really, you should be back at your own home in your own town and doing good works there. That's where God placed you. That's really your, where your primary focus should be." So, but others are called. So that's the discernment process. I think most of the time for most people, it's the ordinary circumstance. This was the power of St. Jose Maria Escrivá, right? It's the power of the ordinariness in our ordinary lives to become saints is where I think for most of us, most of the time, that's where we're going to find our calling. But there are others that are called to, say, missionary work or a special vocation like evangelization through the radio. So it's discerning those. But what does discernment look or sound like, though? How do you know? How can you hear God's voice? What is how? So maybe you're a young person, or maybe you're turned a corner in your life and you're starting a new chapter in your life. How do you hear God's voice? How do you find him?
Yeah, because discernment in a lot of ways is easier when it's the bigger, more, you know, bold moves, you know, and in some
like,
ways we look
what do you want to study in college, right? And that's important.
Right.
But we're talking about even bigger questions.
Right. But right, exactly. You know, I guess here's the thing, you know, Mother Teresa's move to Calcutta, you know, when she moved to Calcutta, you know, in some ways those types of things seem easier in a lot of ways to discern than the little everyday ordinary, how do I serve God today? You know, as Jose Maria Escriva was talking about, our vocations are played out with the mundane choices we make every day. Those involve discernment. And in some ways, sometimes it's easier to discern the big things than it is those little things. But I, you know, the one thing that all vocations have in common, from a Catholic perspective, is they're all rooted from top to bottom, whether we're talking about our unique purpose in life or whether we're talking about our broad vocation to priesthood, married life, religious life. They all involve prayer. And they're all founded to a good extent on prayer. And the reason why is because of that element of discernment. You can't discern if you aren't in communion with God. So you can't really participate and figure out what God's will is if you're not talking to God.
Yeah.
And
so, or you're not his friend.
Right. And so
you need to be God's friend.
Exactly. Right. So, you know, the first step in that answer of, well, how do you discern? Prayer. You know, the first step is praying and having a regular prayer life. And how you build that into your vocation, I think that's one of the challenges of vocation, particularly for a secular vocation, particularly for somebody that's married or living a single life. Finding that time for daily prayer, finding that pattern of life where you have a deep prayer life to help you discern, that's tough. I mean, that's one thing I definitely struggle with my family, is finding those times. You know, we homeschool our kids as part of our vocation. That's part of our unique family's thing. Mm-hmm. And within that homeschooling, sometimes it's tough to get everybody together when they're headed in thousands of different directions for that daily rosary. But we've noticed how much of a difference that makes, you know, on a day-to-day basis, being able to discern, okay, what's God calling me to and what's not. It starts with that daily rosary. And if we don't have it, being able to see God within our daily life becomes that much harder and that much murkier. And so there's a daily practice of prayer that I think goes into discernment on a daily basis, but then obviously that plays into discernment on a larger scale as well.
Well, yeah, that's putting ourselves in a really good position to hear God in the silence. We have to have some silence. So first, let's get in a state of grace, right? That's number one. And then number two, as you said, prayer at home, also prayer before the Blessed Sacrament. There are lots and lots of adoration chapels and opportunities for exposition of Most Blessed Sacrament at local parishes. And that is a fantastic way. You spend time with our Eucharistic Lord, listening, not doing all the talking. I like to do a lot of talking, so that's one of the things I'm working on to get better. But then you can listen. And then you're open to your... I remember Father Dzinski used this term all the time, and I think it's so apt. And that is, you have to be disposed to receive God's graces. If you're properly disposed to you know, you can sort of catch the promptings of the Holy Spirit, and then the Spirit will move you in directions. Now, there's sometimes false spirits, there's evil spirits. You could be getting, you know, there could be opportunities for deception, things like that. But you'll know by what? By the fruit, right? By the fruit of your labors, you shall know them. And so when you're following God's will, you'll see the good fruit being produced in your life. But remember, suffering can be good fruit too. So
Right.
Doesn't mean like it's not the prosperity gospel. It's not like, oh, I must be doing the right thing because look, I got a new car. No, it's not that kind of thing.
No, I think the, you know, when you're talking about prayer, there's spiritual fruit. And I think paying attention to that spiritual fruit is crucial to discernment. I think one of the great tools that we have in the history of church, the church is St. Ignatius of Loyola. And his writings, you know, first off, in a lot of times when people are trying to discern their vocation with a big V, you know, their very broad callings within life, they will take the time to go on an Ignatian retreat. And it's incredibly helpful. Well, and
the full helpful. One's like 30 days, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, 30, 30.
I've never done right, one.
Yep, exactly. And there's right. different, you know, there's different ways you can do the Ignatian retreat. You can go off with a... With
retreat a spiritual master,
right? A spiritual director, mm-hmm. or there are ways that you can do, you know, that 30-day retreat a little bit closer to home. But nonetheless, I mean, that's a huge tool. And then on a smaller level of discerning that sort of day-to-day prayer, Ignatius's discernment of spirits. Is a tremendous tool. And by spirits, he doesn't mean evil spirits, good spirits, angels, demons. Those aren't the spirits he's talking about discerning. He's talking about discerning.
Maybe.
The, yeah, well, no, those aren't the.
Maybe
those,
not. I don't
no,
know.
No, those aren't the, those aren't the spirits right. he's talking about discerning. He's talking about discerning your spirit. He's talking about discerning sort of to a good extent your spiritual mood. As you're encountering various things, are you going into to a spirit of, as he said, desolation, you know, where you're really kind of feeling heavy and opposed or moving away from something, or are you being consoled? Is God calling you closer and closer to this thought? That's a tremendous help in discerning your vocation on a daily basis, but even more broadly on a much more, I guess, sort of lifelong basis.
Yeah, and with that, we need to take another break, and we'll be back with more on the Catholic Cave, looking at vocations and discernment and all things Catholic. You're listening to the Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy. Are you a pro-life advocate? Do you love the Indiana State Fair? These two interests can come together when you volunteer with Right to Life of Indianapolis at this year's Indiana State Fair. Over 100 time slots need to be filled to staff the Right to Life information booth during the fair's run beginning July 30th. For more information or to sign up to help, go to rtlindy.org and click on Get Involved.
At Catholic Radio, we love to hear from you. Call us anytime. Just recently, we found this message on our voicemail.
I'm a non-Catholic that listens to your Catholic radio station, and I just wanted to thank you guys. I listen to Catholic Answers and Al Cresta sometimes, and I think her name's Teresa Tommy. I listen to her and another show or two. I appreciate it.
Call us at 317-870-8400 and let us know what you're thinking.
I just called to say, even though I'm not a Catholic, I listen to your station.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell and Kent Blanford. And we have been talking about vocations. We've been talking about callings. That's ultimately what the word vocation means. And as we've been talking about it, we've been talking about how to
I can't help it, Mark, but when you hear calling, I'm like, just don't call me late for supper.
Right.
I don't know why. I don't know why. It's stuck in my head the whole show. I just had to get it out from the last night. Sorry, go ahead.
You can call me Bill. You can call me Joe. Just don't call me late for supper.
Right. Call me Al.
Anyway, we're talking about callings.
That's why I'm a man of ample proportions, by the way.
Right. But, you know, whenever we talk about vocations, there's often another word that accompanies the word vocations, and that is
lucrative
crisis.
Oh,
we keep talking,
you're right.
and topical in the news, particularly in the church world and in church news, we're constantly talking about the vocations crisis.
Yes.
So I'm curious, Tim, why would you say, and why would anybody say that there's a crisis in vocations when we've talked about everybody has their vocation. Everybody's supposed to discern their vocation. Why has this led to what we just talk about as a crisis?
Well, the crisis to me points to a shortfall of men and women living out as we measure people having chosen certain patterns or ways of life. So I think of like a vocations crisis. What comes to mind is that given the population in a given area, say in the United States, you would look for a certain ratio of number of ordained priests to number of Catholics in a particular area, and you'd want to maintain a certain ratio so that the priest isn't overworked, right, or unable to fulfill his priestly ministry because there's just simply too many people. What's the right number? I don't know. It kind of depends, but 1,000 to 1, 3,000 to 1, something like that. So when we say vocations crisis, what we're saying is that the number of men entering seminary and then actually completing seminary and being by completion, meaning being ordained to the priesthood and entering active ministry, those numbers have continued to come down. The number of at least baptized Catholics has gone up generally, although there's also a great falling away of practicing Catholics. So there's a lot going on there, but I think that's one of the, but the other big crisis that gets a lot of attention, that gets a lot of attention, but also there is a marriage crisis, to be sure, across across the United States and elsewhere in the world, but I'll limit my remarks just to the United States because I know that situation best.
Yeah, and I would argue that both of those crises in those two vocations are because of the crisis in the third vocation, the crisis of men and women called to be brothers, sisters, monks, nuns, religious life, that, you know, that has plummeted
that's collapsed.
And with
you never hear of anyone saying, hey, I want to be a religious brother.
Right. And
you never hear that anymore.
Yeah. And those men and women to a good extent are the heart and soul of the church. And I think those are to a good extent when you have, I mean, you hear this from priests, maybe slightly older priests, but you hear this from priests that I discerned my calling to the priesthood because of Sister Susan when I was in grade school. And, you know, a lot of those vocations to the priesthood are because of the vocations to the religious life of other men and women who said yes to religious life that then led to callings to the priesthood. Same thing with holy marriages. You know, the formation that goes into somebody to be able to have a fruitful Catholic marriage, it goes back to the prayers, the formation, the life of monks, nuns, sisters, brothers, etc., within religious life. So all three of those areas, I think, are intimately connected. And so, you know, I think you could say broadly when we're talking about a vocations crisis, ultimately what we're talking about is a crisis of faith collectively within our culture.
Yeah, it's hard to discern a vocation, say, it's hard for a young woman to discern a vocation to become a religious sister or nun if they've never met one. And certainly outside of, say, EWTN, you certainly can't rely on media sources to accurately depict.
Right.
That's usually quite the opposite. It's usually a bad example that they give
of
religious sisters and nuns. You never see a religious brother ever in media, I don't think.
I think there's a PR element to all of these crises, you know, not a PR. That's not to place blame on the church for bad PR for any of these vocations. But, you know, I think within marriage, our society has done a horrible job of depicting healthy marriages within the culture.
Yeah. Oh gosh, yeah, it's horrible. Turn on the TV.
Exactly.
No one even I'm even dating myself. No one even turns on a television anymore, right?
Right.
You turn on your smart
device. But you certainly do not see happily married religious people on the television.
It's very rare.
I can think of two shows recently that did tend to depict that. You know, one of them was Blue Bloods. I thought Blue Bloods as a show did a good job of depicting healthy religious married life. You know, they sat down, they prayed at the end of you know, they prayed as a family together. They showed that of them praying together.
Oh, the Sunday meal. I've seen some of those shows. Yeah.
Yeah.
I always liked Tom Selleck too.
Right.
I mean, and there's some good acting.
And then the other one was Madam Secretary.
All right.
That's another good show. There's always moral mixed messages. Moral mixed messages in Blue Bloods. There's always morally mixed messages within them. But once again, the heart of that was a fairly religious Catholic family. living the life of Secretary of State and then the husband in that was a professor of ethics at like Georgetown University or something like that. So
well, that could go either way,
right? To be honest with
you. Although we did have Professor Joshua Mitchell on, he was great,
right?
Gotta have him back.
You know, that show, they didn't really bring out the Catholicism to a certain extent of the family, but you got that sense. You know, you kind of understood in the background there was that going on. But
But then there's shows like Sex in the City and all sorts.
You
know, it's mostly contaminated, polluted media,
right?
I would say.
And you know, I mean, people have griped for a long, long time that the depiction of a father is few and far between. Yeah. Of a
Homer
good father.
Simpson Homer, put the death nail
exactly.
into it.
Homer Simpson, Al Bundy. I mean,
I forgot about him. Right. I almost said a bad word.
Right.
Keep your finger on the button there, Kent.
You've got a poor, you definitely have a poor depiction of married life within the secular culture. But the same is true for the priesthood and for religious life as well.
Right.
You don't have good priestly characters depicted in the secular media by any stretch.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you had the clerical sex abuse crisis that was blown way out of proportion by the media. And so, you know, I think that furthered it. And you know, honestly, not only has the priesthood suffered from the standpoint of new vocations, but the life of your average priest has suffered because of it. You know, I think the quality of life of these men that choose priesthood for a way of life, it has gotten immensely more difficult and immensely more lonely and immensely more isolating over the years. And part of that is the PR depiction of the way priests are treated by our culture.
Yeah, I think and we've talked about this before. I think ultimately, Mary Eberstadt in one of her books really put her finger on it. I think how we lost God, how the West lost God, is the name of the book, is the destruction in the family. So as the family has the family defined as the adult man and woman in a sacramental marriage, raising their offspring, that has waned dramatically over time. And as that family unit has, you know, changed over time, been a lot of attacked and destroyed, mocked, the ability to transmit the faith becomes increasingly difficult, if not nearly impossible. And so you wind up, and I think this is what also feeds into the vocation crisis, because you certainly can't. There is no reliable media source to encounter what a good and holy priest or a good and holy sister might look like, or how they might live their life out or live in community. So then you have to meet them in the real world. Well, where do you mean? Well, you're not going to encounter them if your family life is kind of in turmoil and under tremendous stress. You're just not going to encounter them. And
right.
So these are some of the contributing factors.
Right. And those are the contributing factors, but those to a good extent point to the answer as well. And, to reverse these crises and to kind of find a way out, because, you know, the church is suffering right now. The church will always suffer because it's the church. It's part of the vocation of the church to suffer. I think the particular suffering of these crises, the way that we're going to find a way out of them is simply by us living out our vocations as faithfully and as prayerfully as we possibly can on a daily basis. You know, the way we're going to find more priests and more callings to the priesthood is, for those of us who are married, is to live out our life in a faithful, visible way as Catholics. The way we're going to find more vocations to the religious life is for us to raise our daughters and our sons with an openness to God and in a way that they're able to hear and discern God's calling for their life. And then most importantly, for us to recognize the sacrifice that's involved for those that do choose the religious life or do choose the priesthood, that we as Catholic families need to be there to pray for them, to support them, and to help them along in their way of life.
And that about wraps it up for our look at vocations here on the Catholic Cave. Just one request. Please take the time this week, next week, and every week after to pray for vocations in all its forms. For Timothy O'Donnell, for Mark Tuttle, I'm Kent Blanford. You've been listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy, and we'll see you with more next week.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.
Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.